It's showtime.
With Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Diggity, a brand new broadcast week begins. That's the good news. The bad news is it's a short broadcast week. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live, and that is where you go if you would like to be part of the madcap, merry, multimedia, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and almost instantaneously, you will join the likes of Anatole and Man Cave and BT Blom and be moderated on a Monday by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, it really is. It's a. Brand new broadcast week, the 7th day of May, 2018, and yes, it really will be a short broadcast week. I have to leave Thursday, and I'll be gone Thursday and Friday. We've had a death in the family, and so we have to travel to the visitation and the funeral. So that means we'll have as much fun and cussing and discussing and carrying on as we can possibly wedge into 3 hours tonight, tomorrow, and of course prayer meeting Wednesday. I don't know. Since it'll be the last broadcast of the week, anybody want to do a prayer meeting on the front porch on Wednesday? We'll consider the possibility of that. But that's. That's the program for this week. We pulled up short last week as far as fundraising is concerned. We picked up $30 out of the $120 that remained, but we've got a $90 shortfall to deal with this evening. That makes the fundraising goal $290. And then, of course, there will be a shortfall because of Thursday and Friday and. Well, not much I can do about that. But thank you very, very kindly to our subscribers. First of all, since the 5th of the month has passed, it's time to send out thanks to our Patreon subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Terrace and Horst and Nick and Asa and the Nubian and Steven and Alec. And Foam Cups, and Carl, and Ron, and Steve, and Karen, Barb, and Kimberly, Jeremy, Frank, Matthew, Rocky, Jim, Greg, Irwin, and David, as well as Olds, and Robin. Thank you very much indeed. And that's our Patreon group that knocks out about one day's broadcasting per month. Thank you, each and every one of you. We couldn't do it without you. And then, of course, over the weekend, we had our we had subscriptions roll in from PayPal. And so we have numerous partial sponsors of the program, including our buddy of long standing, Sal. Thank you, Sal. And thank you to Laurel up in Minnesota, where it might actually be trying to get warm now. Thanks very kindly to Chris in Germany. Thanks very much indeed to Kitty in Boston. Thanks to Bob in North Carolina. Thanks to Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Thanks to Don in West Tennistan. To Brock in PA. To Alex in New York. As well as to Reed in California, and our buddy Dr. Allen down Texas way. Thank you very, very much. And thank you as well to Barbara for becoming a brand new member of the subscription group, the Set It and Forget It group. Thank you very, very much indeed. And all told, like I said, we finished the week and pulled up $90 short. So just to get that part of it out of the way, I need to raise $290 tonight, $200 tomorrow, $200 Wednesday, and that'll get us down the road. Thanks very kindly to Kelly for jumping in. Kelly got a good giggle out of a photo that Agnes took, and I posted on social media. I looked at it. I never would have seen it, but didn't do anything fancy with the grill. Barbecue-wise. I wanted some plain old hamburgers this weekend. And I used the gas grill for it because it's monsoon season. And so stayed out of the rain as best I could. But I saw smoke billowing across the front porch. And I thought, oh no, gas grills, flare-ups. And I opened the thing and, fireball. And so I didn't know it, but Agnes was standing behind me. And she does this to me now. She takes pictures of me when I'm not looking. And so I've got my arms kind of off to the side. Just had a t-shirt and a pair of shorts on. And it looks, and she said to her, it looked like I was getting ready to have a shootout with the grill or something. So she called it showdown with a flare up. But the trousers, the shorts, are kind of gray colored. And Kelly, for a while, thought that I had gone out to grill without my pants. I didn't see it, but apparently others did as well, but rest assured, if you run across that photo, I'm wearing pants and I don't have some sort of great big giant tumor on the right side of my right leg. Anyway. So, there you have it. But anyway, that was the weekend. I did work up a big pot of I worked up a big thing of a thing, because that's more descriptive, of the Northwest Alabama hot and spicy slaw to go with the barbecue and maybe travel with when we when we have to leave later this week. Gotta take food. So we'll be taking food. But that was kind of the weekend. Because mostly, it rained. And rained. And rained. And from the looks of things, when it's time to travel, well, how about that? Hey, yeah, leaving Thursday. So what's the forecast for Thursday? Why, yes, thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very kindly. That's mighty nicely. Subject line, grill battle. That grill does not stand a chance. You will demand great food from it, and it will provide. And it did provide. Because the bottom line is, and maybe we've forgotten because we have become so thoroughly accustomed to getting our burgers from burger places. But a good bun, some good beef. I seasoned mine up. You know, I can't help it. A nice ripe tomato, some onion, some pickle, some lettuce, mayo, mustard. If you like ketchup, okay. That's a burger. And, you know, when you start, you can pile on the stuff like the blue cheese and the sautéed mushrooms and the bacon and the bourbon barrel-aged bacon and whatnot. But the burger you grill yourself, notice I didn't say barbecue. I had a question about that last week. The burger you grill yourself is 9 times out of 10 going to be the best burger you'll have from anywhere. I would have put those burgers I made the other night, I would have put them up against Five Guys, or Who's a Burger, or Which a Burger, or various and sundry clown burgers, or imaginary monarch burgers, or daughter of a wild-eyed Republican, red-headed pigtailed daughter of a wild-eyed Republican burger. Anyway, they couldn't know. None of them. And you know the funny thing is? It took probably less effort, less money, and less energy than any of those fast food burgers. So if you're thinking about it, you know, if you get a hankering for a burger, unless you're going somewhere that's like local and you're helping support the local economy, do it yourself. You'll be glad you did. I just took a couple of pounds of ground beef and hit it real hard with the Montreal steak seasoning and worked it all together and everything, and boom, there we were. Just, you know, food for thought. See what I did there? Food for thought. I'm well into season 3 of Breaking Bad now, just for those of you who are scoring at home. And if you're scoring at home, please don't send me pictures or emails, okay? I found a line in there. No spoilers. Don't ruin it for me. I won't ruin it for you. But there's a moment when Jesse... And it may well be the most profound line I've heard yet. He looks at Walt and says, you have to accept yourself for who you are. Walt looks at him and says, who's that? And in a moment of pretty serious, what I presume to be foreshadowing, Jesse looks at him and says, I'm the bad guy. Yeah, that one had some force. But I got to tell you, it's stressing me out. No, Muffle is not writing again, Jim. Get your mind out. It's too early to send the program into the gutter. We got to have a fighting chance. This is just the beginning of the week. But it does. It has all the earmarks of a classic tragedy. And you know it's coming, and you know, I've heard of people just binge watching it over the. I can't. I can do a couple of episodes, and then I got to set it down and walk away. because for, and maybe it's because I live in a place that's burned up by drugs, meth, opioids, what have you. Maybe it's just a little too recognizable. God damn it, Steve. Bob, when it's over, you need to check the alternative ending. Don't do that. I'd rather you called me Gordo again or something. thanks to Jim in Spain, I already know the song that ends it, and it's driving my DJ brain crazy trying to fit that those pieces into the puzzle. But that's the Breaking Bad update. That's the other thing I found. It's not particularly good for me to watch it before bed, because it's so real. It has a way of finding its way into my sleep. Yes, you are, Steve. You gave away that there's an alternative ending. That's giving something away, Steve. Dadgummit. What am I going to do with you people? It's, by the way, in case you hadn't, it hadn't dawned on you, it's Moran Monday. And wow, have we got Morans. For instance, let's do this right. There we go.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It may be a little squishy on the carnival midway, but come on over just a few steps away to the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed, friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins, we've got them all for you. Every manner of right-wing Moran, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, trumpanzees, maggots, Republicans, all behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Why would you waste time and money throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in the desperate hope that you're going to win some disease-ridden little baby iguana that you can take home and it'll eventually get big enough to eat your entire family? Why would you do that when, for less than the cost of half of a McDonald's hamburger, not even a cheeseburger, my friends, for less than the cost of half of a McDonald's cheeseburger per program, you can have all of this behind the thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Yes, everybody actually gets into the Moran Monday tent for free, but for those who want to make sure the Moran Monday tent is here each and every Monday, well, yes, you're giving up a half of a McDonald's hamburger, and calling it a hamburger is, well, that thing from McDonald's is a hamburger. The way that I am, your humble host, am Neptunus Rex, god of the briny deep. Mm-hmm. So, that's what a $10 a month subscriber gives up to make sure there are Moran Mondays for everybody. And I implore you, if you're able, sign up for a subscription. You'll be awfully glad you did. And in the meantime, if you choose to walk through the thin cybernetic door of the thin cybernetic veil of canvas, well, keep a hand on wallets and purses, children, small animals, even that iguana you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, backpacks, and yes, European-style messenger bags, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, and you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Come on through. Yeah, the presentation will begin in a moment. Nah, it's going to begin right now. The National Rifle Association has closed up its annual clavern. Some 75,000 members of the country's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization descended on Dallas last week. You may recall we discussed it somewhat. And apparently the current president of the National Rifle Association is stepping down. So they had to find a new president for the National Rifle Association. And who better? I mean, after all, we're talking about an organization that plays fast and loose with campaign finance laws and likes to go overseas to find some friendly foreign money. So who better to be the new president of the National Rifle Association than Iran-Contra crook and un-American treason committer Ollie North? No, really, it was announced that Oliver North, he of the Shredder, yes, he of Iran-Contra, he of the shady deals and the associations with people like Manoushehr Ghorbanifar and trading arms for hostages and ignoring congressional prohibitions of providing material monetary support to the Nicaraguan Contras, Ollie North is going to be the new president of the National Rifle Association. The goddess of irony. Oh, she, She's got the NRA in her hands. And so, of course, they couldn't go even to Dallas without creating a bit of controversy. No sooner had they gone to Dallas than they got themselves all wrought up, the 75,000 attendees of the clavern there, because apparently in Dallas, and I'm giving away some free publicity here, why the hell not? Because it's a news story, right? I've never eaten there. I wouldn't know if it's good. No recommendation. But, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity, and this story's getting them a lot. There's a place in Dallas, apparently not too far from where the gun-toting, freedom-protecting gun-humpers were claverning. There's a place that serves breakfast and all-day brunch, which is, I don't know what. I mean, brunch is a combination of breakfast and lunch, and lunch is just a precursor to dinner, so your guess is as good as mine, but it's called Ellen's. Ellen's serves breakfast and all-day brunch. And I would submit that this is a brilliant case of trolling. Somebody needs Marketer of the Year for this, because as the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian gun-humpers began looking for a place to grab a bite, well, Ellen serves comfortable southern comfort food. And like I said, brunch all day, and maybe that means all the mimosas you can drink. Because nothing says freedom like packing some heat on the street and getting shit-faced on orange juice and cheap champagne. But it was only after the gun humpers had eaten their food and therefore had to pay their bills so as not to get arrested for dining and dashing, it was only then that the poor little geniuses noticed the message at the bottom of the bill. Thanks for visiting Ellen's. Morans. What we're talking about here is morans. Thanks for visiting Ellen's. A portion of this week's proceeds will be donated to organizations dedicated to implementing reasonable and effective gun regulations. Welcome to Dallas! This then occasioned a full-on collective purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy and the having of entire litters of kittens with crocheted tails on the pack, on the part of the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual, fundamentalists of the National Ruble, I mean Rifle Association. What? Do you see what it said there? Reasonable and effective gun regulations. And all this time we thought they was just there selling good Southern food, and now we gotta pay for it too? Ooh-wee! Oh, the evangelical, amosexual, fundamentalist done went walt. And they went over to Yelp. And they complained on Yelp. And they swore that even though they didn't live in Dallas, they would never, ever, ever again eat at the Ellens. Oh, wait, time out. Larry says, ha ha, nice joke, Bob, about Ollie becoming head of the NRA. Ha ha ha, yeah, right. Fuck, you're not serious, are you? Yes, I am! Wingnut welfare at its very best. Maybe Ollie will wear his Marine uniform some more and dishonor it some more. You know, just like he wore his Marine uniform when he was testifying before the Iran-Contra Committee, and a little pettifogger by the name of Brendan Sullivan complained to some senator, Senator, I am not a potted plant. Some of us thought we heard him say, I'm not a pot plant, and it was obviously he wasn't, but never mind. Most of us thought he looked like some sort of invasive species of non-native grass, but that's an inside environmentalist joke. But back to Ellens. They done had themselves a plum hissy. And then Joe Groves, who owns Ellens, he initially decided to add the message after convention attendees. Now remember, these are good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals. You know, amosexuals is just another word for gun humpers. Just so we're clear about that. He added the message after some of those folks behaved really nasty-like to the people who worked for him at Ellens. And I dare say that within our little community here, within the Horn Family Community Congregation, we've probably got more than a couple of folks who have worked in the food industry. And as a consequence, they know how hard and thankless that work can often be. And also, the further south you get, the smaller the tips get. I mean, I know people who work at, like, Bob Evans, and they dread Sundays, because that means that the Baptist dime tippers are going to be there in hordes. People who write, Jesus loves you, get saved, there's your tip. Or leave a dime next to the coffee cup. That's one of the dime tippers. They dread working that Sunday shift that start, you know, being on duty at about noon, because the church crowd comes in, and you know maybe they've already been cleaned out by the passing of the plate or whatever, but they don't tip worth a damn. And restaurant work is hard work. Bartending, hard work. Table waiting, hard work. Table busing, hard work. short order cooking. Hard work. Hard, hot work. And so Joe Groves put the message on his receipts. He said he added the message after NRA members took to insulting his employees on Facebook. He said, "I'm making a list of the vile, racist, moronic conversations overheard from NRA attendees eating at the restaurant. They don't even speak softly." Well, see, in the age of Trump, racists don't have to speak softly anymore because they have tender little peelings. And if anybody calls them out for being the goddamn racists that they are, well, they'll cry and get all snowflakey and babble about MAGA a lot. Grove said they don't even speak softly. Do you keep your illegals in the back? That's one comment that was made to some African-American employees at Ellen's. To another African-American employee, an evangelical fundamentalist amosexual said, "You don't sound black. Where are you from? India?" Oh, and then the NRA. Oh, then the National Rifle Association. They got all hot. And they decided it was time to boycott a restaurant that they had already not boycotted because, you know, we're talking about the NRA here. Atne ute aitbre, if you one what I inme. These are the same people that get out guns and shoot coolers that they've spent $250 on. Yeah, I know. So off to the Twitter went the NRA and said, "Steer clear of Ellen's in downtown Dallas. Why go there when there are so many other great choices?" And then 6,000 little evangelical fundamentalist amosexuals retweeted it. Mm-hmm. And then they took to the Twitters some more, and then they went to Yelp, and they had themselves a hissy about food they'd either never eaten before or had eaten and paid for and were pissed off. One evangelical fundamentalist amosexual member of the NRA said, "Decent food, but I don't need the people who fry my eggs deciding my right to bear arms. This here's Texas, not California. Good luck with that." Good luck with what? Texas not being California? I'm pretty sure that Californians are awfully damn happy that they're not Texas. Oddly enough, the people who were frying their eggs are probably citizens of the United States as well. And maybe the fact that they don't want some fundamentalist, amosexual, lawful, awful gun owner coming in and murdering them while they're trying to get the sunny side ups on the plate without breaking the yolk or nothing. No, their political opinion has no value, no validity, no nothing. They need to shut up and fry eggs. And then, of course, Mr. Groves also, interviewed by BuzzFeed News, Mr. Groves told him, "Well, yeah, we've gotten calls here saying that they're going to shoot the place up." Because you know, they're law and order types, freedom-loving types, you're evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals. "I don't like you having a political opinion I disagree with, so we're going to shoot the place up." So if it turns out that Ellen's burns down or blows up or some guy walks in there with, say, an AR-15 with a bump stock and slaughters a couple of dozen people, well, we'll know right then and there that in America, you don't say nothing bad about guns. And that'll learn them, won't it? It's More and Monday. Meanwhile, here's the funny part. Joe Groves is not some sort of, liberal anti-gun guy. He, like the vast majority of Americans whom the NRA ignores, is okay with the Second Amendment. But he would like to see, 6-year-olds get to be 7-year-olds. He'd like to see, high school seniors get to graduate. Or, in the case of a young woman who was all set to graduate herself, a college senior get to graduate from Belmont in Nash Vegas instead of having to have her mama walk across the stage and pick up her diploma for her because her daughter was massacred in a fucking Waffle House. But the NRA can't stand that idea. So Ellen's tried to make clear that they support the Second Amendment. Joe Groves said, "I'm far from extreme and I'm pro-Second Amendment and pro-gun rights. But I want people to be able to live long lives, in school especially. This is not that controversial." Nonetheless, the wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization in the entire United States continued to sleaze and slur and slander all over Ellen's, because maybe somebody there thinks that, like I said before, a 6-year-old should get to be a 7-year-old, and the idea of the 6-year-old getting to be a 7-year-old is actually more important than some pasty-faced, doughy dude's right to purchase his 15th goddamned AR-15. Well, that's a valid point. Yeah, Hung Like Jesus says, "Don't people know you don't talk shit to people that's cooking your food? Come on!" Well, again, we're talking about members of the NRA. Atne ute aitbre, if you one what I eat me. I felt a little bit vindicated with the cold open to Saturday Night Live this weekend because Pig Latin made it into the script, followed by Alec Baldwin playing Trump saying, "You know I don't speak Spanish." Morons. Because it's More and Monday. But it was a tough weekend for the National Rifle Association. Among other things, before the convention took place, someone with a projector decided to put some words up on the building where they were having their clavern meeting. It said, "NRA enables domestic terrorists." What are they going to do? Sue? What's the NRA going to do? Sue? Truth is an absolute defense. The NRA makes it easier every day with their very existence, and the and the things that they do to, not for or not with or not in, but the things that they do to our body politic, they make it easier for the people who want to slaughter six-year-olds and keep them from being seven-year-olds to obtain the firearms they need with which to accomplish their evil purpose. Some celebrities, Jimmy Kimmel, Amy Schumer, some others, they held a counter rally to protest the NRA near the Clavern Center. Parents of some of the students killed in Parkland also showed up. They launched the hashtag NORA, N-O-R-A. Meanwhile, Ellen's got a publicity boost by people who also don't want to see six-year-olds prevented from becoming seven-year-olds. And now there's a notice up over at Yelp. Active cleanup alert. Well, you know, when the NRA folks have been by, you generally want... You don't want to just clean up. You want to get out the bleach and you want to fumigate and... This is what happens when people decide to start protesting restaurants. This business recently made waves in the news, which often means that people come to this page to post their views on the news. While we don't take a stand one way or the other when it comes to these news events, we do work to remove both positive and negative posts that appear to be motivated more by the news coverage than itself than the reviewer's personal consumer experience with the business. As a result, your post to this page may be removed as part of our cleanup process. Nice. Poor little maggots. Poor little butt-hurt maggots. They can't stand for... They will not tolerate anybody but them having free speech. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Robert in Australia says, on insulting the people who make your food... Yes, insult the people who are making your food. Enjoy your botulism. Exactly. Note coming in from Steve from New York. Confession is good for the soul. I'm seeking absolution from the Horn family. In 1994, I voted for Ollie North for Senate in Virginia. Forgive me. I knew not what I did. Hey, wait, Steve, where's the mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa? You're shorting a little bit there, aren't you, Brother Usher? But yes, you are forgiven. Go and sin no more, and that'll be 36 hail flying spaghetti monsters and 17 ramens for you. Going back to the Ollie North thing, which we just did. Flavio points out, and Fawn Hall was named curator of the NRA archives. I came up with that one, says Flavio, and nobody got the joke, except maybe you. Yeah, that's good for a cowbell, Flavio. Flavio works in understated humor. Now, there, new NRA president. Lee in New York says, latest NRA perk, discount on snow tires. Now that is deliciously obscure. Arnold says, I'm having a very bad feeling about the NRA leadership choice. Can't believe it. I do not understand. Well, when I first saw it, I thought it was a joke too. But so far, I can't see that it is. So, what else? Matt in San Francisco says, subject line, horror movie. The folks from the Reagan years are just like the monsters in horror movies. Just when you think you're free and have outsmarted them, here they come, come up right behind you. Run! And I think we could probably add in there a note about not going into the basement. Because that's kind of where we are, isn't it? I mean, we've gone into the basement and we expect, you know, that there's not going to be horrible things down there in the middle of a horror movie. Well played. Well played, Matt. Back to hamburger. Ron in Raleigh says, the Kroger 73%, 27% ground beef mix makes the tastiest burger. I make a one-eyed burger with sharp cheddar and bacon. That sounds tasty. P.S., have you seen Black Panther and Avengers Infinity War? No and no. I have to wait for... I'm waiting for it to show up on a pay-per-view service. And I've already heard terrible things about Infinity War that make me awfully sad. But... I'm anxious to see both. A question coming from the chat room from Steve from Georgistan. Bob, are you going to make a strategic vote for Blankenship? The short answer is no. Because he's running as a Republican in the Republican primary. And we don't have that. Our primaries are only partially fucked up. If you are a registered independent, which is a contradiction in terms, you can vote in either party's nominating process without having to be a member of the party. Again, dumber than shit, right? But Democrats can't go vote in the Republican primary, and Republicans can't go vote in the Democratic primary. Personally, independents shouldn't be able to vote in either one. That's why they're not. That's why should they have a say in picking a candidate in a party that. Of which they are not a member. Oh, well. But that's, you know. Mm-hmm. Right. Steve says we have open primaries here. Open primaries are the dumbest things since ventilated condoms. But no. Maybe if we had them, I might go and do that, but there are actually people who need and deserve my vote in the Democratic primary that I'm looking forward to voting for. I'll be leaving the Democratic primary for the nomination for Senate blank. You've got a candidate that I haven't voted for in ages. Who is the incumbent, and you've got a candidate from a campaign that's more fundraising stunt and publicity stunt than political campaign running against him. So I get no choice there. And so I have to make my own and just leave that ballot position blank. I can't reward a publicity campaign with no chance of victory whatsoever at all in any universe. And I can't vote for Manchin. Now, I'm pretty confident. I could be wrong. I'm pretty confident Joe Manchin is going to survive his primary challenge. A month or so from now, the Mountain Party will have, you know, that's the pathetic little rump of greenies who couldn't win a race for dog catcher in a town full of cats. And I expect them to give the primary challenger their nomination to run against Joe in November, so that that campaign can go on being a fundraising vehicle. And here's the breakdown on, here's the analysis on that. The three people running in the Republican primary of note, I mean, there are a couple of other sort of, you know, publicity stunt campaigns, just like the one in the Democratic primary. But there are three primary candidates. Don Blankenship, Evan Jenkins, and Patrick Morrissey. Patrick Morrissey is supported by Big Opioid. And he has said that, he's been a Trumpensie all along. MAGA, y'all. MAGA. Love me some Trump. But the fact of the matter is, he's an interloper from Jersey, I think, who is a lobbyist for Big Opioid, and his wife's a lobbyist for Big Opioid. And he was brought in here. He was brought in here to replace a highly effective Democratic attorney general, and eventually to try to claw his way up the ladder. He's also a fetus fetishist, because you have to be. I mean, there are no pro-choice Republicans. Okay, they're just not. Evan Jenkins has been a Democrat. He's been a Republican. Evan Jenkins is a member of the Evan Jenkins Party, whatever will propel him, and he probably most closely resembles what Republicans used to think they were. He's got fabulous hair. He has an innate ability to show up anywhere there's a TV camera. And, of course, he wastes no time in talking about how much he loves him some Co. Oh, he's a friend of Co. And then there's Don Blankenship. And Don Blankenship has been running a Trump-style campaign. I explained the whole China person thing on the air the other night, so I hope people have already taken that in and understand why he's throwing that around. Look, he would not make ads criticizing China persons if there was not an audience for that kind of bigotry in this state. And there is an audience for that kind of bigotry in this state, because this state is a highly bigoted, racist place. I'm sure there's some, oh, no, we ain't. Yeah, we are. Just because a few of us aren't doesn't mean that the majority isn't. And Blankenship is running these filthy, bigoted ads. He's financing his own campaign. He is, I hope, pushing Mitch McConnell every day a little closer to that stroke which he so richly deserves. The only problem being, if Mitch McConnell had a stroke, how long would it take for anybody to figure that out? It's not like he's full of vigor and life as it is. But he's making, and so the conventional wisdom is that if Don Blankenship can win the Republican primary for Senate, that he will be West Virginia's answer to Roy Tola Moore. That's why Geezer Disgustus and his tiny little thumbs got on his phone and demanded that West Virginia Republican primary voters elect either Morrissey or Jenkins, but not Blankenship. Because he says, you know, remember Alabama? Yeah, and I remember how he supported Roy Moore, too. There's only one problem with this. And it goes back to the fact that something Robert Byrd told me many, many years ago, there's only two ways to run a campaign, unopposed and scared to death. And with that being the case, I don't know how scared Joe is, but we do not have the sufficient, and please forgive me if you object to the way that I'm describing this, we do not have the sufficient demographics in the state of West Virginia to stop a Roy Moore. Because you may recall that it was a combination, not just one, the African American community came out strong for Doug Jones, and two, there were about as many Republicans who wrote in a candidate as there was in the margin of victory for Doug Jones over Roy Moore. Well, we don't have those kind of Republicans, and we do not have the populational size generally, and certainly not the African American population, sufficient to save this state from itself. So there is a greater risk that Don Blankenship could win in West Virginia and beat Joe Manchin than there was that Roy Moore was going to win in Alabama. And yes, as Brother Deacon Asa alludes, we do not at this point in time have any allegations of child molestation against Don Blankenship, which may be why he found those two little children of the corn to hold in his last ad. Are they identical twins? I mean, they're dressed identically. And they're perfect little blonde-haired white children. And that's a dog whistle a mile wide. And remember, at the same time that he's running ads about China persons, he's married to a woman named Mei Ling. I know. But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the same way that West Virginians voted for Trump, even though they knew that he was a confessed practitioner of sexual assault, at least sexual abuse, if not sexual assault. So it's going to be embarrassing and terrifying all the way to November, regardless of who wins. But even Big Opioid, that is so thoroughly behind Patrick Morrissey, is going to have a terribly hard time getting behind Don Blankenship. I mean, even drug dealers have some morals. And Evan Jenkins... He would have all the RNC and all the RNSC support he could ever possibly want. But it's going to be hard for the RNSC and the RNC to get behind Blankenship. And the other side of the equation is that Joe Manchin has a war chest that has enough money in it to burn a sopping wet herd of elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. So, again, interesting. Thank you. I've been awarded a cowbell for ventilated condoms. Thank you. Thank you, Larry. I appreciate that. Terrace, meanwhile, says, harumph! Open primaries are the dumbest things since term limits. Those two. I don't think term limits is as funny as ventilated condoms, but never mind. Subject line, Don Blankenship, Scott and Punky note, if it turns out that Don Blankenship loses, there's still a silver lining. Yes, dear God, please. He would be perfect to portray Mr. Belvedere if ABC ever decides to do a revival of that 1980s sitcom. I didn't realize it until years later, but the actor who played him on the series, Christopher Hewitt, was featured in the original Mel Brooks film The Producers as the gay director of Springtime for Hitler, Roger Debris. Nor did I. Of course, you'd have to rewrite it so that, so that Mr. Belvedere burns the children alive past being recognizable as human beings, but, hey, you know, I'm watching Westworld, and that's got about as much to do with the original story as I do with being Neptune, King of the Briny Deep. Lee in New York. it says, if you get to the blank, would the vote tally people get a laugh if you marked Enship, E-N-S-H-I-P, or would they not get it? No, it'd just be a spoiled ballot, and they'd throw it away. No senses of humor in the vote counting business. Okay, that's nice. Silent R. Lamar says, enjoying the program, but since you're unable, not unwilling, to share some food porn, I must say I'm doing my own food porn since it's a sunny day and not hot. Trying some bits and pieces of the great Bob Kincaid, doctor of grillology. Wish me luck. All the luck in the world, Silent R. Lamar. Let us know how it works out. Asa, with a valid question. Would it be any worse if the Republican was to beat Manchin? He votes with Trump every time anyway. He doesn't. And here's the thing. If he's in the majority, and this is what makes people get in line. If he's in the majority, that means he's been there long enough to be the chair of a committee. But he'd only get to do that as long as he voted for Chuck Schumer for majority leader. And that would provide for a Democratic majority, you know, if everything else goes right. Early on, and I don't make any bones about this, when it looked like the Senate was an impossible task, I said, might just as well have a Republican instead of Manchin. Because then maybe Democrats would quit bowing and scraping to him and letting his position on poisoning his own constituents just blow past. But everything changed last fall. They changed in Alabama. They changed when Corker stepped down or announced he wouldn't run again, and when Jeff Flake said the same thing. Dean Heller is vulnerable in Nevada. And damned if the Senate race in Mississippi isn't even competitive now. There's still Heidi Heitkamp to worry about, and Joe Donnelly, and Indiana has their nasty-ass little primary tomorrow, too. I don't know. Is there a publicity stunt primary campaign against Joe Donnelly, too? Did Justice Democrats hustle up one of those as well? But the short answer, Brother Deacon Asa, is that as loathsome as he is, as prone as he is to fuck up and vote the wrong way, but at the same time I have to acknowledge voting not like me as a West Virginian, but voting like the West Virginians who voted for Trump, it's not the same as having a Republican there. No matter how odious I thought his vote for Pompeo was, no matter how odious however many other things he's done have been, it's not the same. Plus, if the UMWA members, and there are some left, not a lot, but if they get excited and get active, because after all, he saved the UMWA health plan, if not the pension plan. I mean, Joe did that. Then they've got a reason to get excited because, of course, the biggest union buster in the history of busting the United Mine Workers is none other than Don Blankenship. It adds up to an arguably easier math to victory, not path to victory, see, I'm... for Manchin against Blankenship than it does against Evan Jenkins as a so-called acceptable Republican or New Jersey interloper Patrick Morrissey with all the money that he would be bringing in from Big Opioid. But it will also be a comment, if Blankenship wins tomorrow, it'll also be a comment on West Virginia. The numbers will matter. I don't know what the turnout's going to be like. But if the Republicans do nominate a guy who conspired to violate safety regulations that resulted in 29 human beings being incinerated past recognition as formerly members of the human race, it will not reflect well on us. And then, of course, God knows how many hundreds of thousands of for-profit media journalists will parachute into West Virginia to find West Virginians suffering from economic anxiety so that they can ask them how they feel about China persons. Yes. All right, so that's the... I was waiting for somebody to get the joke. Jim says, Debris? No, Bob, Dubree. Restores my faith in humanity sometimes. Okay, sorry about that. Semantics, Ron and Raleigh says, hey, Bob, these are not drug dealers, they're pushers. I direct you to Steppenwolf's The Pusher. Dealers sell natural enhancers, cannabis, mushrooms, and the like. Okay, pushers. Very well. Well done. Well said. And... yes, I agree. So we are at 9 minutes past the hour, $290 to raise this evening, and we are at zero. it would be nice if we could knock this out, because going into Tuesday and Wednesday with a deficit is horrifying. Thanks, everybody, for all you do to keep the program on the air. And maybe we can take a bite out of this at some point, between now and 9 p.m. And after, for the folks who listen to the podcast. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. I'll be back. Fourteen minutes past the hour on this Moran Monday on The Horn, and a little bit of breaking news. Sandra just sent this along. There's a new Me Too allegation. And just oddly enough, the hill is reporting, and I'm going to the phones just in a second. This is important. The Hill is reporting that four women have accused the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman, of what The Hill describes as non-consensual physical misconduct. The New Yorker broke the story. Two of the accusers, Michelle Manning Barish and Tanya Selvaratnam, told the New Yorker that Schneiderman hit them often after drinking and in bed without their permission. I'm reading straight from the report. The two did not report the incidents to the police when they took place, but sought medical help after the episodes. Both of the women said Schneiderman threatened to kill them if they broke up with them, and Selvaratnam alleged that he said he could have her followed and her phones tapped. A third woman also told the New Yorker that the Attorney General abused her physically, but she was too afraid to come forward at the time. A fourth woman, who is a lawyer in New York, said Schneiderman slapped her across the face after she denied him when he made an advance on her. Schneiderman issued a statement to the publication denying that he assaulted the women. In the privacy of intimate relationships, I have engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. I have not assaulted anyone. I have never engaged in non-consensual sex, which is a line I would not cross. His spokesperson told the magazine that he never made any of these threats to the women. Okay, that's that part of it. 9 minutes ago, Uday, or Kusei, I never can keep the two Trump boys, which one's which, tweeted, "There's a tweet for everything," and subtweeted something that Geezer Disgusted tweeted on the 11th day of September 2013 at 7:10 a.m. Wiener is gone. Spitzer is gone. Next will be lightweight AG Eric Schneiderman. Is he a crook? Wait and see. Worse than Spitzer or Wiener. Nine minutes ago. Eric Schneiderman, of course, is the guy who has been pushing for New York's State Assembly to validate statutorily the right of the state of New York to pursue financial crimes that might be very similar to financial crimes likely to have been committed by Trump and or members of his inner circle. And so, well, is it true? We don't know. Just like we didn't know if the allegations against Al Franken were true. And there will be a desperate rush to get rid of Eric Schneiderman so as to get the heat off of the Tangerine Tiberius. Or at least damage him enough politically so that perhaps he would be forestalled from being able to do his job. Tied in with this, of course, a story that broke over the weekend that elements of the Trump criminal enterprise hired a private Israeli security investigative firm, intelligence firm, to try to dig up dirt on the people who negotiated what's called the JCPOA. In other words, the Iran deal. Oh, this is getting sleazier and slimier by the minute. Let's run over and check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Oh, boy. You just can't tell the players on a scorecard, can you?
Oh. I mean, when Sandra told me about this on Twitter, I told her I've kind of been expecting something like this.
Well, I couldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole. It's just amazing how it's going to really play out. And, you know, you just get so tired of hearing about all this crap. All these people and their little
I get so tired of these people crapping all over my country. I don't know about you, Jim, but I mean that's
exactly.
Kind of
these internecine quarrels instead of dealing properly and devoting the time to what is the business of government. I mean that's what they're there for. And if they want to do this other kind of stuff, let them go to Hollywood and find one of those porn producers or somebody like that, you know?
Well, sure. And, of course, this comes the weekend.
I mean, that's what it is.
This comes the weekend after Stormy Daniels showed up on Saturday Night Live in a skit with Alec Baldwin playing Trump, in which she demanded his resignation.
Right. That was,
timing,
that
as they say, is everything.
Uh-huh.
Timing is everything.
Sure is. And it's just amazing how close together those drum beats are going to occur. And something's going to come up that I hope will get his sorry ass out of office. I don't give a damn what it takes. That's all I have to say about him. As far as Oliver North is concerned, Bob, that man is as crazy as a sprayed roach, as you call him. I still have seen a copy of the Alexandria police blotter in which he, when he was in his like early 20s, was apprehended by the Alexandria police for running through the streets down King Street butt naked.
There's that story too, yes.
Oh, God. And to have, I used to carpool sometimes with a lady when I was at the Pentagon, it didn't feel like, I just didn't feel like dealing with all the subway and everything like that. And that was the first thing that she had on in her car was Ollie North. And it was just so repugnant to me. And I liked the lady a lot. And I said, Carol, I said, you're a great person. I appreciate the ride. But I just can't stand to listen to that man. And she was just a pawn. And you don't think he's a great American? I said, no, I do not. He's a liar and a cheat. And he's lied to Congress, and he's disgraced his uniform. Somehow things were never quite the same between us. It was odd. But he's just, he's a good man for the job. For the head of the NRA, they couldn't have picked a loonier, crazier man. And yet he came out of that whole thing in 1986, back when Iran-Contra came, he came out of it smelling like a rose.
Well, it didn't hurt to have a friendly court, friendly appeals court, to hear his appeal of his criminal conviction.
Well, not at all. I mean, absolutely. I mean, of course, and Reagan coming on TV that night, making his excuse. Boy, did he squeeze out of that one. And I thought to myself, has there been anybody else? Well, the great communicator wouldn't have been communicating too much longer after that because what he did was just as bad as what Richard Nixon did.
Sure it was. And we had and we have Ben Bradley and Catherine Graham at the Post to thank for saying, oh, the nation can't stand another constitutional crisis. We've got to let Ronnie slide.
Well, you know, they didn't want to get their tips under the ringer, as Nixon once said. Yeah, I guess I guess, you know, that whole thing was pretty noble, but pretty rough for them. And I admired Brent Bradley and Katharine Graham, Kay Graham. They were two great people.
Well, they had courage when it came to Watergate, but it had all run out of them when it came to Iran-Contra.
You know, Bob, sometimes it gets to that. I mean, sometimes you just get, you fight, and sometimes you just get so tired that you're not willing to put yourself, and in their case, the paper, through it again. Because Reagan was probably too popular and could do no wrong in the eyes of so many people that they just felt like they couldn't take him on. I don't know if Kay Graham ever invited Ronnie and Nancy to her home. I know she invited all the presidents and their wives, except for one, and that was Richard Nixon. He and Pat were not invited. But she always had a big party for the incoming president and his wife. And I'm sure that Ronnie and Nancy went, because that was the type of thing to be invited to Kay Graham's house. I mean, she was the doyenne of the Washington social set, you know? And I will say this, in the words of Ben Bradley, in her funeral at the National Cathedral, what a broad, and that she was. So there you go. But as far as this other mess, the Trump is concerned, it's just so embroiled and so, it just leaves such a bad taste in your mouth every day. It's something new. And it's something new about him and his disgusting family. And I understand that financial reports have actually said that he is not even worth, really, $5 million. Now, this I heard on one of the programs on Progressive Voices. And this is one of the reasons he doesn't want to reveal his taxes and stuff like that. That he is not worth a scintilla of what he pretends to be worth.
And yet that story came out over the weekend about how they went on the Trumps went on a buying frenzy and did everything they did in cash some years back.
Well, that may have been some years back. I don't know. I know his finances are such that, and we've talked about it before, that he is not a good businessman. He is a dishonest person. He will not pay his debts. No one will give him any credit except a Russian bank to a German bank, I guess. That's how it works. And it seems as though his credibility as a president is just about as good as his credit rating, which I'm sure isn't too good. I would just love to see what kind of credit rating he'd get from whoever would be able to rate him. I guess one of the three agencies or maybe something like Standard & Poor's or another, you know, monetary evaluation agency. I just wonder. But, you know, it's just the way it is. I do have something different to tell you tonight.
Yes.
About 4 o'clock this afternoon, a friend of mine came by, and she said, I've got a friend of mine with me, and I've got a cat.
Aw, is there a new cat in your
there
residence?
There is a new cat. We just let her in, said, like it or not, she's yours, and you need her. Because it's the only thing that's going to help you. And she's white, and she's got big patches all over. And she's 2 or 3 years old, so she's a settling type kitty.
Yeah.
And I call her Patches because she has these patches on her back, white undercarriage. And also Patches because I'm very sure that she will help patch up a broken heart.
Well, that's very nice of your friend, and a nice name too. You know, It sounds to me, I saw a cat that looked very similar to your description. Last week, Agnes and I went down to do the recall work done on the car, and that turned, of course, into a giant financial disaster. But
I'm sure.
But instead of having to sit there for 8 hours at the dealership, we went out and ran around a little bit, and we went up into Southridge, and we were looking for. We decided to go into PetSmart and see if we could find a fun little toy for the grand puppy, you know, the little Yorkshire Terrier. And they've got.
Oh, you have one.
No, we don't. It's the grand puppy. In other words, it's our daughter's dog.
Oh, okay.
But she comes over and spends the weekend sometimes. The puppy, not the granddaughter, not the daughter, the grand puppy.
Okay.
But we were looking for something for her to play with, and they've got a cat adoption center over to one end of the PetSmart store. And there was a brother and sister in there, and they were both white undercarriage with patches across the top. And they were about, I wonder if this is where your friend found the cat, because they were about
actually,
the right age. Is she fairly good sized?
Yeah, she is. And the person is having to get rid of her because of small children, and they keep picking at her, and if kids will do. And she's just not that kind of cat. She doesn't like it. And also, I think they're in the process of moving. And also, with her came all her shots and stuff like that, the records and everything from the vet.
I'll be darned.
So this is just.
And she's acclimating well to your place and everything?
She's just making a few. It takes a while.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a while. I mean, when I first pulled Rufus out of the hole 12 or 13 years ago, he spent the first 4 days here in the litter box, scared to death.
Aw, poor fella.
He had a rough time. And he is still just he occupies a place in your heart, but you can't go on because I was literally grieving very badly.
Oh, yes.
And the doctor had to come here Friday. And so it's been rough.
Oh, I know it has been.
I hope that this will at least be the beginning of a healing period for me. And
a happy home for the cat.
Exactly.
Well, that's I know you'll make it that part. You're good to animals, so.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you. I just to tell you the truth, Bob, the way I see people behaving now, and I don't know. Maybe it's me, but it seems to me as though people are becoming more and more and more mean-spirited, and they're unhappy. They have a scowl on their face, and you get to the point where you don't want to deal with them. And I just keep my contact with people to an absolute minimum because I just don't want to deal with the disappointment and the crap and the foolishness that they exude, and for them thinking that I'm stupid enough not to see through it. And I guess I'm becoming what you call very misanthropic, and I can see even why Hitler once said, "Now that I know men, I prefer dogs." Excuse the Hitler mention, but I mean,
No, I do.
I don't know if dogs preferred him too much. I guess that blondie did. But what I'm trying to say is that you can only take so much from people and the disappointment that they give you. And people, the ones you count on the most, the ones you really can count on the least, and, you know, over the period of years, you just become sort of worn down in dealing with that sort of thing. You know, even the a railroad iron will wear out.
Oh, doubtless.
And I guess that's the way Ben Bradley and Kathy Graham felt about Reagan. They just didn't want to go through all that wear and tear. And, of course, what was it, 20 years
well,
later?
I also, I mean, this is my personal speculation, but I think they recognized that Reagan wasn't all home.
Well, no.
And that it would be that, and that it would have involved exposing him for being not of sound mind, and that that probably and that that possibly could have placed the nation at risk vis-a-vis the Cold War. Because it's one thing to be it was one thing to be the Soviet Union, and have the supreme leader declared to be resting at his dacha for 6 months, and then have a funeral after everything had been sorted out in the power struggle. But with the American political system, that would not have worked.
No.
I mean, we tried it once with Woodrow Wilson after a world war and before there were any such thing as nuclear weapons, and even that came to chaos.
Oh, yeah. His wife was the one who really ran the White House after he had that stroke, I believe.
Yeah, and that was the other time that we had ourselves a vice president from Indiana. And Thomas,
that you should mention that.
And Thomas Riley.
Good old cow.
No. Thomas Riley Marshall.
I'm sorry.
He's the man who said he's the man who he was a man of a fairly acerbic wit. Who gave us the phrase, "What this country needs is a good 5 cent cigar." And he was known for shooting his mouth off, and he was kind of funny, but in Wilson's disability, of course, back then there was no 25th Amendment, and members of the Congress came to him and said, "Listen, you've got to assume the presidency," and he said, "That would be a great idea, but I have no legal authority to or constitutional authority to do so." And he was a pretty decent lawyer.
That's right, we did.
But from a historical standpoint, you might find this interesting. I know you love history. There are historians who lay the entirety of the Second World War at the feet of Thomas Riley Marshall, because he, whereas Wilson had been bullheaded. Thomas Riley Marshall was thought to have been the guy who could have gotten the Senate to come along on the League of Nations.
Really?
Yes.
That's one of the things that killed Wilson, too. Because he went all over the country in very poor health, trying to support our entry into that body. But old Rockefeller, or what was his name, the one who Lodge.
Henry Cabot Lodge, yeah.
Henry Cabot was the one who just opposed that to no end.
Right, he scuttled it out of a fit of pique against Wilson.
Yes. Just meanness, just absolute meanness,
mm-hmm.
and selfishness, and without any regard of what good it could have done with our membership in that league. Because, you know, even the fascists, when the League of Nations was called upon to, for example, try to help Haile Selassie when Mussolini invaded Ethiopia, and Hitler was doing his stuff too, they would always comment on the fact, "Well, you couldn't even join the league yourself, so what good is it?"
And it was thought that Thomas Riley Marshall could have been more conciliatory toward people like Henry Cabot Lodge. and gotten the treaty ratified, and that in itself would have saved the lives of the countless millions killed in the Second World War, both in war and in the war crimes that went with it.
Well, if they could have at least had some type of real collective security that surrounded those fascist countries. I mean, they tried to build up collective security with France and Great Britain, and, God, who else would be left? Russia. But then, in 1939, Stalin saw exactly what collective security meant, which was nothing. And that's what he recalled Litvinov as ambassador to Germany, and then sent in Molotov. And that began in August of 1939, the so-called rapprochement between Nazi Germany and Stalinist Russia. I mean, they tried to substitute some type of cordon sanitaire around Germany, but it just didn't work. They didn't have the force. They didn't have the power. They couldn't depend on Spain because of Franco. He was a fascist. They sure as hell couldn't depend on Italy because of Mussolini. And they couldn't depend on Denmark or any of the Scandinavian countries. I mean, you know, they didn't get involved in that kind of stuff. And then, you know, you have the whole thing played. But, you know, that Lodge, he was a real asshole. And if you ever read anything about him, he was just a real jerk. He is just a nasty person.
Oh, without a doubt. And that reminds me, I noticed something I had written. I was talking with Agnes earlier today, and I need to add that to the list of things that references for Trump, because I thought it was a really good one when I came up with it. Meta Mussolini.
Good Lord. You do come up with these names. I'll tell you, you've got a whole glossary of them. My God!
But that one needs to come. That one needs to go into a hot rotation. Meta Mussolini.
Well, I think you should. You have an entire library of these names. It's like I say, a whole glossary of them. And every time you come up with one, well, he's done it again.
You know one thing I've noticed. It's entirely possible that somebody else would come up with it too, but I have more and more often I've seen maggot and maggots in circulation on social media, and I had never seen that phrase before I came up with it. I think we even came up with it on air here. You know, morons are governing America, Trumpansy scum, maggots.
Yeah, I know.
And all of a sudden, I'm seeing it in other circles.
Well, you know, maybe some people are listening to your broadcast and stealing your thunder.
Well, I don't know that they're stealing anything, but from time to time, you get the idea that there are people listening who, you know, don't make themselves known.
We should copyright it. It'd be nice, because God knows there'd be a whole book of things that you could sell if you could put a copyright on it. But, you know, like I say, and I'll finish this conversation, other people want to talk. I'm just, you know, you're so tired of hearing about this thing with Schneiderman and then North and then all these just torrid, ugly, nasty, low-rent, white trash shit. And that's all it is. I mean, it's just like having one of the Kardashians stick her behind right in your face. And that's exactly what it is.
Well, that sort of runs parallel with something that Darlene wrote in a couple of minutes ago. Darlene, our buddy Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, Eric and Don Jr. Why don't we keep it simple and just refer to these two as Beavis and Butthead? The resemblance really is uncanny, right on down to the hairdos. And I think Darlene's right, Jim.
Yes, you.
No more Uday and Kusay or Udi and Cootie. Beavis and Butthead.
Oh, and which one is the Great White Hunter?
I think they've both done the Africa circuit, haven't they?
I don't know. I saw a picture of one standing before a giraffe. I think it was, a giraffe. He killed a giraffe. I believe it was. And I personally cannot look at stuff like that. I just can't do it.
No, it's sickening. And, you know, shoot a zebra, at least a lion's got a fighting chance.
He may have killed a lion. He may have killed a lion. I'm not sure. They had some big, horribly fat man who killed the lion, and his gut was so big that it protruded over the lion's carcass. So it must have been a giraffe. And I saw that on Facebook, and I said, the only two words I can say is, God damn you.
Well, giraffes are so beautiful, so elegant, so...
Of course they are. And, you know, they have an awful
graceful,
lot of
graceful, even, in their own way.
And, you know, they use giraffes a lot to, with secretions and fluids in their bodies to do work with high blood pressure because of the giraffe neck and how the neck can support the linear form can support blood flow.
Do you get all that blood up to that brain all that way from the heart? Yeah. But you know what? There's a disconnect. I can't fathom. And look, I've hunted, Jim. I have. I've never killed that I knew of, on purpose. But, you know, I've taken some nice armed walks in the woods, and I've squeezed off a couple of rounds and didn't hit.
Be glad you didn't, Bob.
But, you know, I understand. I mean, look, I come from people, and so do you, who at some point in their existence hunted to survive.
Right.
But I can't get that mindset that says, ooh, look, a big, magnificent, humongous... animal that I gotta kill that. I can't fathom it. How do you call shooting something like a giraffe that has virtually no means of defending itself? How do you call that sport hunting? That's just slaughter.
It's absolute.
Every now and then you'll get a story about some elephant poacher that misses and gets the wrong end of the tusk, and you're like, "Go elephant!" Or
really?
You know, or a lion. Famously, Hemingway's short story, "The Short Happy Life of Francis McComber."
Right.
Or the other short story, "The Snows of Kilimanjaro."
Right.
But, like I said, the lion at least has, you know, a 10% chance. You know, you flounge, you miss, you know, game over. I've got a video here, Jim, and this is gun culture. Apparently, this was taken at the NRA Clavern in Dallas, and it's a little boy, and there's a display. You know, in the convention hall, there were just rifles all over the place. This little guy can't be more than 3, maybe. You know, he's walking, he's got some dexterity skills, and he walks up to a semi-automatic rifle that is at eye level for him, and somebody's taught him something, and I presume it's his mama that's with him, and he walks up to that rifle, and he's all excited and smiling and happy. And all of a sudden, he works that bolt, you know, bang, up, back, in, down, and then starts squeezing the trigger for all he's worth. And then he takes the magazine out, puts it back in, works the bolt, and squeezes the trigger again. And the pretty blonde lady standing next to him high fives him.
That's the swing is bent. There it is. And they just, and like I say, the term is gun culture. It is a culture. It's just like so many other bad things have been cultures. And I see what they can do. That was it, one portion of my life, and no more. No more. I can't deal with it, and it still haunts me to this day, some of the things I've seen. But nonetheless, as far as going into the woods are concerned, and maybe on your trail hikes, I could see taking a .22 pistol in case you have to deal with a rattlesnake or something like that that's going to threaten you or your wife. But other than that, I guess my motto is take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but footprints.
Pack it in, pack it out. Exactly.
That's it.
And well, before you go, we've had a modification to Beavis and Butthead, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. He says we should refer to them as Beavis and Butthurt.
Butthurt.
Yeah, Beavis and Butthurt. And anybody that wants to see that bizarre video of the toddler working the semi-automatic assault rifle, I just retweeted the video. Holy shit, you know.
The only thing I could do after that is maybe I could find, go, well, I could always go to the History Channel and see old-time photographs of the HK of the Hitler Jugend, you know.
Yep.
Doing the same thing.
Well, you know,
absolutely the same goddamn thing.
Nice call on the debris too, Jim. I'm glad somebody got that. Yeah.
But you see, after that, I did, and his friend was named Carvajal.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Don't you remember that guy in the black leotard suit with the beard and everything?
Mm-hmm.
They come up in the air.
Well, and you know, there's all kinds of those references. Which movie was it that had Professor Little Old Man. Little Old Man!
I'm not sure, Bob.
That wasn't the producers. No, that was High Anxiety. High Anxiety. Professor Little Old Man! Little Old Man. Yeah.
You know, the thing, I saw that movie, but every other thing in one of those movies, he was always yelling about fags. Fags. I mean, it was just like, maybe within the movie, it was like 50 or 60 times. I don't know.
Well, Mel Brooks got away with things that nobody could get away with in the modern era.
Well, I mean, you know, it didn't bother me when he said that. I mean, I just thought, you know.
But I mean, consider the script that Richard Pryor mostly wrote and Mel Brooks added to with Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. And, you know, in that particular movie, I don't see any mention of that type of thing. Maybe with Harley Corbin and Slim Pickens when he was reaching down the bathtub with Froggy.
Oh, are you? Wait, whoa. Are you telling me that you don't see a little of that in the entire production number of The French Mistake?
Oh, well, yeah, at the end of it, when they broke.
Yeah, okay,
when
yeah.
When they went off.
Yeah, wow, yeah, the end of it, sure.
Yeah. They had the biggest fag in Hollywood, Dom DeLuise, stick out your tush. I mean, I thought it was hilarious because, I mean, I wasn't offended by that. I thought it was just hilarious and well done. It didn't bother me at all. And, of course, you know, Dom DeLuise, one of the biggest friends he had was Liberace. You know, they were a whole coterie of the gay circle in which they tried to kind of keep it low-key in Hollywood. Now it's much more exposed than it is now. But it did bother me. I was not offended by that. And it takes a
because it wasn't done. It wasn't done viciously. Maybe
it wasn't. You know, I mean, half the cast of Mel Brooks' movie got together with a dancing set and said, I parked over by the commissary. They just hooked up. And I thought to myself, it's okay. No problem with me. I'm not that serious kid.
Mongo only pawn in great game of life.
True.
Jim, have yourself a good evening.
And the same to you. Enjoy the conversation. And, well, sorry about the loss of your family. Have a safe trip down there. My God, that's a long way to go.
Yeah, it's in a just go, turn around. Well, I mean, we'll be there a couple of days and then turn around and come back. Sad.
Well, unfortunately, that's just the way life turns out. Okay, take care.
Now, wait, hey, time out here. Isaac points out Dom DeLuise was married with kids.
Mm-hmm. There. Dom DeLuise, yeah. But still, I think he and Liberace used to get together and have who knows? They may have both gone to the ATM boy bank. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, dear God. Well,
I mean, I don't know, but they were good friends, and I know they used to entertain one another. And so there were, a number of people who were, who knows. Just because you're married and have kids doesn't mean you're not a switch hitter, friend. Let me tell you, I've seen more men with kids. Oh, Lord. And the good thing about them was, from my history, they went home.
I understand. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening.
Yes, sir.
All right. You take care.
Yes, sir.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Jim with a new member of his household, and good for Jim, and good for that lucky feline. Meanwhile, in regard to the video of the kid, Lee in New York says, that three-year-old that knows the steps to use a semi-automatic does not know that you do not touch other people's stuff. That uneducated child knows how to use it, but he does not know when to use it. This is the precursor to the toddler shoots sibling story, which is exactly what I thought. There are way too many stories of toddlers shooting toddlers out there. And if you go and look at that video, you'll see that, well, that toddler knows exactly how to go about it. And you can only hope he doesn't have siblings. Yeah, and meanwhile, the torment continues over my continuing attempt to not have the rest of Breaking Bad spoiled for me, with Steve from Georgistan, again alluding to the song that ends the program, that I found out about from, I think, our buddy Jim in Spain, a week or more ago. And it's a great song. I love that song. But now, because I'm an old DJ, it's stuck in my head. And I'm sort of playing out all the reasons that you would use that particular song. What else for a Moran Monday? 2 minutes before the hour, 2 hours into the program, had $290 to raise this evening. We are at zero, and that makes for a worrisome week. Fingers crossed. News broke this weekend. By the way, the line's open if you want to jump in into some conversation. New callers, mighty welcome. News broke over the weekend that John McCain, who at the age of 81 is beginning to contemplate his end and put his, I guess this is what you call putting your affairs in order. He's making plans for his funeral. And among other things, he said he wanted a couple, there were two things he specifically wanted. He wanted Barack Obama to deliver a eulogy. And he wanted Donald Trump to stay the hell away. maybe he figures that by doing that, the ever so petulant, ever so delicate, ever so easily offended Donald Trump would say something else sleazy about him. And then maybe John McCain from the grave could get up out of the dirt to go and do something, do some bidding for Donald Trump the way he's done. Now, that's mean. But he wanted Barack Obama to eulogize him. He wants Donald Trump to stay away. And this, of course, has angered, wait for it, slimy, creepy old Orrin Hatch. Upon hearing the news, Orrin Hatch, 83 years old, whom Politico contacted to get his... Why, Politico? Why would you call an old scumbucket like Orrin Hatch, who slimed Anita Hill, who helped create a Me Too moment for Anita Hill long before there was a Me Too moment? Why would Politico contact him? Well, I guess you got to contact somebody that's some 80-year-old Republican to get that perspective. And Orrin Hatch said, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, well, he's the President of the United States, and he's a very good man. I think John should have his own wishes fulfilled with regard to who attends the funeral. But I hope he changes his mind. Well, sure, Orrin. Sure. Maybe he'll change his mind and Donald Trump can come and just shit right into the grave. Like he shit on him when he said that... I like people who don't get captured. I've been plenty hard on John McCain over the years, but I do not relish the way he is moving toward his end. Because if you have a common shred of humanity, you don't. And even if the other side, even if you think the other side doesn't have a common shred of humanity, maybe you don't demean your own. Although I did say earlier that I hoped that Don Blankenship was moving McTurtle ever closer to his stroke. Of course, I put Mitch McConnell on a scale of evil that is far, far above or below, depending on how you look at it, John McCain. McCain had a dalliance with greatness and then decided he'd rather play than fight. Jim should get a cowbell, says Scott and Punky. He had the line of the day, the main benefit of married men, they went home. Or as a DC drag performer I once knew used to put it, beat me, whip me, call me dirty names, make me write bad checks, then get the fuck out. trivia moment, courtesy of Lee in New York. The only TV show without a theme song, or without theme music. 60 Minutes. Tick, 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 tick. You could make an argument that's music. I guess Orrin Hatch wants Trump at his funeral. He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people who weren't captured. And to this day, Trump has never apologized. But then again, Trump doesn't apologize. Ooh, good one. Brother Deacon Ace is banging on all eight cylinders this evening. Can we start calling Hatch Orange Hatch since he's got his head so far up Trump's fundament? Oh, that's a cowbell. Without a doubt. Orange Hatch. I'll try to remember that one. I'll jot it down right next to Meta Mussolini. Now, by the way that the Eric Schneiderman story that I shared about an hour ago, the way it's now being framed by the Associated Press is New York's Attorney General, who positioned himself as a voice for Me Too victims, and they even used the hashtag, accused of physical abuse by four women. And there's a philosophical question. You know, we started, there was that whole, the whole issue of you have to believe the woman. You absolutely have to. And I remember Steve from Georgistan, I think it was Friday on the front porch, maybe, saying, yeah, but what, you know, just automatically? And it turned out there was some validity to Steve's query, because then it turned out that the woman who got the ball rolling was Leanne Tweeden, who was a known associate of a bosom buddy of Roger Stone. Who, you will recall, had said, now it's going to be Al Franken's time in the barrel. And so everybody jumped out and believed the woman when it turned out that she was probably engaged in a bit of good old-fashioned Republican rat fuckery. And the other, let's see, what were some of the allegations? He touched my waist. I was taking a picture of it with him, and he put his arm around me, and he touched my waist. And so now this business comes along with Schneiderman, and two of the women say that they didn't go to the police, but they sought medical attention. Schneiderman, on the other hand, says he's played some consensual sex games. Who knows? Who knows? But this will obviously work to it'll work to Trump's advantage, as we've already seen. Beavis jumped right on the story, almost as if. He had some sort of a heads up. Weird, huh? Developing. Jose with a tweet. Saying West Virginia is going to elect a murderer for profit, talking about Blankenship. Well, let's remember, tomorrow is not an election. Tomorrow is a primary. Tomorrow is And I'm sure some of you have taken this somewhere along the way. The MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Pulse Personality Inventory, a lot of seemingly random questions that are neither right nor wrong. You know, do you like this or do you like that? Blah, 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 blah. And at the end of it, they say, well, congratulations. You should be a proctologist. Well, basically what's happening tomorrow on the Republican side of West Virginia is that West Virginia is being West Virginia Republicans are being administered a personality inventory. And we're going to find out just how psychotic Republicans are in this state. And again, it creates a certain tension, but you still learn from these data points. Just like with the general election in Alabama, over with Doug Jones, we learned a lot about white evangelicals in Alabama. Because 63% of white evangelical females and 72% of white evangelical males, despite the fact that there was credible evidence that this guy was a skeevy little girl stalker, Roy Tolamore, well, I voted for him anyway. Well, tomorrow we're going to find out something about the Republicans in West Virginia. Now, even Alabama has a considerably higher population than West Virginia. Populationally speaking, we're probably nearest to New Mexico. New Mexico's got a slightly larger population than we do. But tomorrow we'll find out just how sick the Republicans are in this state. And make no mistake, the result of the test is going to be they're sick. Because they're either gonna pick a guy who played fast and loose with safety regulations, such that 29 men got incinerated, or they're gonna pick a guy who is part of the massive opioid network that has driven this state to madness and despair, or they're gonna pick a guy who doesn't care how many people get sick, and how many people die as a result of his obsequious fascination with the coal industry, Evan Jenkins. But we're gonna know something. And then in November, we will learn even more. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, for the record, I detest you calling Don Jr. Beavis. Beavis had more dignity and intelligence in his pinky finger than Don Jr. has in his entire miserable life. There's that, but I gotta have something that works, and I can never keep Udi and Cootie separate. I can never decide which one's Udi and which one's Cootie. But as Darlene points out, the resemblance of Beavis and Butthead is pretty significant. Let's run over to the phones and check in out somewhere in far Wisconsin. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, far western Wisconsin.
Yeah, what's happening, Flavio?
I just wanted to reminisce a little bit. Because I lived through these things, I mean, that's why I cracked that joke about Fawn Hall. She was the one that helped Ollie North shred the documents, you know, That's the first time I heard there were such things as shredders, document shredders, I guess. And they got really sophisticated, but back then they were just, you know, office supplies, and they were really bulky. And but I remember at the time, you remember Goldwater? Well.
Oh yeah.
Yes, Bill Casey was the director of the CIA. Is it true that they're mining the Nicaraguan harbors? You know, because if this is true, this is illegal. And of course, the U.S. was condemned, the World Court of Justice at The Hague, for, you know, heinous acts like the mining of the Nicaraguan harbors and bombing health clinics. At the time, I was a freshman in college, I guess, or late high school. And I remember health workers coming up to speak at our local churches here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, members of the Nicaraguan Health Workers Federation. The acronym in Spanish is FEDSALUD, for Federación de los Trabajadores de la Salud. And these nurses were talking about the toll that the Contras took on, you know, bombing clinics and, you know, real live babies being blown to bits, and not fetuses, but, you know, actual people and babies and whatnot. And these nurses came and they spoke at St. Rose Convent, which is a very famous convent of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration here. And they also came and spoke at UW La Crosse, the satellite, the La Crosse satellite of the UW system. They also spoke at Viterbo University and St. Rose's Convent. I mentioned that already, but, you know, those things, you know, I remember those things, and I remember the Iran-Contra hearings and watching this day in, day out, like one protracted spectacle. And it was all about ratings. I doubt anybody remembers this, but I was like horrified because I know I was a kid, but I still had a mind, and I was, you know, I couldn't imagine what was going on, and I have a mind for details, and that was one of them, you know, shredding of documents. And that brings us full circle, you know, because the NRA, I guess, was involved in laundering money for the Trump campaign. So that's why I thought, hey, let's bring Fawn Hall back, make her the curator of the NRA's archives.
That's funny. And the fact, you know, there was that brief period of time there where there was a sort of triumvirate of femme fatale.
Mm-hmm.
There was Fawn Hall,
mm-hmm.
Jessica Hahn, and Donna Rice.
Yes.
And Donna Rice.
Yes. Temptress is all.
Well, I mean, that may be a little bit strong, but Donna Rice brought down Gary Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Hahn brought down Jim Baker. And Fawn Hall, well, she didn't so much bring down Oliver North, but she was a focal point of.
And the big hair.
Wow, that was an era of big hair. I think there are photographs of Agnes from the same time with big hair. I mean, there were some women you did not smoke around because their hair had so much product in it, it might spontaneously combust.
That happened to me at the mezzanine of the union at UW La Crosse. We could still smoke in the union. And classmate of mine asked me if I could light her cigarette, and I did. and her hair went up in smoke, and I was like, oh my God.
Woof. Yeah.
No, you know, she was okay, but there was a lot of Aquanet.
Have you ever seen what a jungle clearing blowtorch Aquanet can be?
I did. I was a witness.
I mean, I've seen Agnes threaten people with a Bic lighter and a can of Aquanet.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. That could definitely be a chemical weapon.
In a minute, she's going to come through the door of the studio saying, Bob, you're not supposed to tell those things.
But, you know, you got to...
I saw her one time. She does not like wasps or hornets or yellow jackets. And I saw her go up to a wasp nest with a can of Aquanet and a Bic lighter and just... And you know, no more wasp nest.
My mom used to do that. She was nuts. She's also, yeah, she had somewhat of a pyromaniac in her. But I remember that because we used to get a lot of wasp nests in the backyard, and we also did a lot of gardening together. And
I've seen her Aquanet anthills, and even without lighting it, you know, that Aquanet begins to set up and the ants just go and freeze in place. Shit's strong.
It is. Absolutely. But you remember? Did the nurses of Nicaragua come and speak in your campuses out there? Or
Well, I was out of college by then.
Oh yeah, that's right. You're maybe a decade.
Well, 52. I graduated college in 85.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's when I graduated from high school.
Okay.
84.
And so by the time Iran-Contra was ramping up, I was working at CNN.
Yeah, I was still in college when Iran-Contra was... But it occupied an entire summer? What was it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And those congressional hearings were riveting. I mean, I didn't know how many... You know, they say the indigenous language of people in the Arctic, that there are 1,000 different words for ice, and
or snow
or whatever, and that desert dwellers have 100 words for sand. I didn't know that Republicans had that many ways in English to say I don't know or I don't remember.
I can't recall.
I can't recall if I have a recollection. I don't remember if I recall whether I have a recollection of a memory.
Yeah.
And I'd never thought of it in that light before, except when I was just talking to Jim a little bit ago, that maybe Catherine Graham and Ben Bradley felt like it would have been extremely dangerous to expose just how non-compos mentis Ronald Reagan was within the framework of the Cold War.
Just repeat that. My hearing is not so good.
Ben Bradley and Catherine Graham famously said that the country could not stand another constitutional crisis that quickly on the heels of Nixon, in regard to Iran-Contra.
Oh yes, I remember that.
And it dawned on me, and it never had before, that maybe the reason for saying that was because it would have required to show just how non-compos mentis Ronald Reagan was in the course of proving his high crimes and misdemeanors. And if that's the case, there's a credible argument to be made that way.
So what do you believe, that he was nuts, or his mind was going?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Or that he was manipulated?
No, it was going. It was on
no,
the
it
way.
Was going.
Yeah.
But okay.
I mean, there's that one famous moment where, I forget, was it a sporting event or something? They said, Mr. Reagan, what are we going to do about, and I can't even remember the topic, but what I remember is, in a stage whisper, you can hear over the hot mics, Nancy leaning across and whispering in his ear, tell them we're doing the best that we can. And then he looks at the cameras in that B-movie actor way and says, well, we're doing the best that we can. He wasn't home.
No, but since nobody was home, someone must have been in charge. And that's what I was
well,
thinking.
Well, I mean, there used to be a class...
Bill Casey.
There used to be a credible class of political mandarins, if you will.
Okay.
Who could be counted on...
Are you talking the deep state on me now?
No, I'm not talking deep state. I'm talking about people who competently know how fucking government works.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not talking about the derp state. No, there were professionals. Those professionals no longer exist. You know,
no,
John Kelly, scary, nasty old racist that he is, likes to think that he's one of those people. Mad Dog Mattis likes to think that he's one of those people. But if you get sideways of Trump, don't matter. One minute you're the most powerful, you're the CEO of the most powerful corporation on earth, and the next thing you know, you're being fired by a guy who sells meat through the mail.
Unsuccessfully, I might
right.
add.
You know,
vodka,
a non-drinker who sells vodka. A non-thinker who runs a university.
It just spreads itself.
Yeah, the hits just keep on coming.
And then, but back then, you had Bill Casey, you had Barry Goldwater, and Barry Goldwater is asking him, is this true, Bill? This was before he had the brain cancer, which is now, I guess it was the same brain cancer that is ravaging McCain now. And I don't remember what the response was, but what I remember was the interchange between Bill Casey, the director of the CIA, and Barry Goldwater, very Republican. He said, you know, this is illegal. He said, this is illegal, mining of Nicaraguan harbors. I think that's an act of war, right?
Well, it's certainly an act of war, and it's certainly a violation. It's a war crime.
It's a war crime.
But so too is bombing the civilian utility infrastructure.
Yeah, clinics, water purification plants.
Yeah, war crimes.
That all went down when I was barely out of high school and freshman, sophomore in college.
Yeah, and
I remember these things. Am I crazy to remember these things? Am I the
right? No, you're not. You're actually poised to see the long game and the long con.
It was on television every blessed day.
But I mean, look what we got. You know, what we got with Reagan. How can I explain this? The election of Reagan presaged and made possible the election of Trump. It's a through line, Flavio.
No doubt about it. No, and now I'm every day convinces me more and more that yeah. Reagan
and you know what?
Possible.
Let me take this a step further. 30 years from now, you and I may not be around then, but 30 years from now, there will be a young pundit, a young Republican pundit class who will pine for the dignified days of the administration of Donald J. Goddamn Trump, who at least knew how to wear a necktie right, because by then we'll probably have a Republican president who just walks around playing with himself underneath a goddamn loincloth, if he bothers with the loincloth.
Like something out of Idiocracy.
It'll make Idiocracy dignified.
That's something scary.
Herbert Elizondo Mountain Dew Camacho has more dignity in his in his little finger than Donald Trump has in his entire body. President Camacho actually cares about his country. He doesn't know much about it, and he certainly doesn't know how to solve the problems, but you know, even he can look up and go, shit's fucked up.
That's something?
So, yeah.
After you told me about that movie, I think I saw it 3 times. It is brilliant. Along with Office Space. I liked Office Space, too. But that's because I was working at a few offices in my time. And that resonated with me.
Well, yeah. Stephen Root's character. If I don't get my stapler back, I can burn this whole place to the ground. Well, yeah, I
worked under management like that, and it was just like that. It was absolutely just like that. It was beautiful. Did you get the TPS memo?
Yeah. I know.
I live that, man.
Well, you know, that's why I had to run off, and we had to found this radio network, because I can't work for fools. I can't.
No, and
because my ability to suffer them gladly, well, to use the common parlance, my bag of fucks is all empty of any to give.
I'll end with this thought. We were studying this proposal or something at Humana, the insurance company. I'll mention it. That was so long ago, and everybody's dead now.
Yeah, fuck them.
Fuck them. But I said, you know, the whole proposal was asinine. And my supervisor, Ken, goes, "We will have no swearing at this meeting. Do you understand?" And I told him,
"Do you understand that that's not swearing?"
No, I said, "There is no ass in asinine, you ass."
How long did it take you to clear out your desk?
It was like immediate.
Yeah, it kind of had to be.
I loved it. I was like, it was one of my few triumphs.
Yeah, that's one of those where you walk out the door, sticking that fist in the air, you know, viewed from behind like Judd Nelson at the end of Breakfast Club.
Exactly.
Don't you forget about me.
Fuck you. It's like, there is no ass in asinine, you ass.
By the way, Scott and Punky say, I think Reagan was the inspiration for Mel Brooks' cross-eyed, corrupt tool and befuddled fool, Governor LePetitmane in Blazing Saddles. Work, 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 work. Hello, boys.
Wow.
Do you miss me?
That's good. Cowbell.
Yeah, cowbell. Yeah. I wonder if that's a possibility.
No, that's pretty good.
I wonder if he was modeled on Reagan. You never know. Well, Flavio, I'm going to make a little room here for a couple other folks
absolutely.
To call in. But
absolutely.
It's been a delightful conversation. You got a note from Jim. Jim said, tell Flavio that I used to pass through La Crosse en route to education workshops at Fort McCoy. Lovely city, La Crosse, says Jim.
Absolutely. It's God's Country. That's what it's called.
Yeah, once it, you know, when it thaws in May.
You take care.
All right. See you, Flavio. Bye now.
Bye.
Flavio has a well-developed but a sense of humor that he doesn't bring out on display very often. But when he does, it's special. Thanks, Flavio. 25 minutes before the hour, we had $290 to raise this evening. We're still at zero, but that's okay, because Todd's on the line. Hey, Todd.
Bob, you know what?
What?
There's some money coming in. It has to be. Got to be.
Well, you know, we're moving toward the middle of the month, and that always gets tough. No, we're not. It's the 7th of May. What am I talking about? Oh, well. It's been a weird month already.
Well, it's Reagan talk.
I know. It's difficult for those of us, as they say, of a certain age.
Yeah, Flavio started that. I think I know Flavio. Honest to God, I think I met him in the airport somewhere. Seriously.
He was probably a guy sitting on a chair in at one of the gates, playing some doleful piece on a classical guitar and chuckling quietly to himself.
Yeah, and you're curious, and hey, what's going on? You know, and he just deep conversation, like, oh, gotta go. You know, my flight's here. Yeah. Let me see here. You know where I want to go, honest to God. I haven't laughed this hard, honest to God, because there's so much crap going on. I'm really getting depressed, honest to God. This whole Trump thing now has gotten me. It's too much. But I did have so many good laughs, and it's so sad. It's really sad because, Doug, this commercial, this China, if I hear that motherfucker, that shit is so fucking funny. I cannot believe that somebody let him make a commercial in 2018.
Let him? Oh, no. He's trafficking on it now. He called out Trump today.
But that shit, that shit is so preposterous. It can't be fucking real.
Well, what I love is the monotone. You know, we appreciate monotones here at the Horn, Todd. I consider myself a kind of a kind of a connoisseur of monotones.
Titanic Tuesday.
And so they've got him, standing up in front of this green, sort of baby puke green house with white trim that you know isn't his. And it looks like he's holding up these two little girls who are wearing matching sort of peach-colored springtime outfits. And they appear to match.
Wait a minute.
And they appear.
When you said children of the corn, man, I almost fucking vomited. When you said that shit, I heard you say that. I almost vomited. Seriously.
Well, I mean, they are two perfect little white girls. Okay. And he's holding them up. Got his arms, the crook of his arm under their little bottoms. And I can't see where his hands are. Because of paid for by Don Blankenship for U.S. Senate, approved by Don Blankenship, covers up where his hands are.
And you know it's Don Blankenship. That's the fucking problem.
But the thing is, it's almost like these kids. You know the flying rigs they use for like Peter Pan productions and shit.
Yeah, with the cables.
Well, yeah, right. It's like these kids are suspended on them because meanwhile he's standing behind them, just like he's hanging on because of the Thorazine dart they shot in his neck. Because he's not a nice person. This is, after all, a guy who once threatened the life of an ABC camera crew. This is the guy who threw his McDonald's breakfast at his maid when she got him, when, you know, I don't know, maybe they were out or whatever, but she brought back the wrong McDonald's breakfast and he threw it at her. This is a guy who got, who wrote memos talking about how if you're messing around with safety, you're not moving coal and we're here to move coal, damn it. And two guys got killed in that mine a short time thereafter. And then there's the 29 incinerated human beings at Upper Big Branch. And there's at least one Upper Big Branch victim family member saying, yeah, I'm voting for Don Blankenship.
Lead poisoning, Bob.
But anyway, so he's standing, because I'm setting this all up because we're going to run the audio. What the hell? Why not, right? Because this goes back to the fact that, you know, we are connoisseurs of monotones here. So, not just you, but everybody else, you know, get the hockey puck, get the duct tape. And really, whose kids are these? There's no way they are related to Don Blankenship. And they've got to be suspended on wires. And I know because the one kid on the right, the one little girl, is kind of reaching around to her back like, what's your arm doing?
It's disturbing. The whole thing is just disturbing. It's terrible.
But it starts out with him standing under some tree that's in bloom. And here we go.
How can anything bloom around him?
Oh, Jesus. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Don Blankenship, candidate for U.S. Senate, and I approve this message. Swamp Captain Mitch McConnell has created millions of jobs for China people. While doing so, Mitch has gotten rich. In fact, his China family has given him tens of millions of dollars. Mitch's swamp people are now running false negative ads against me.
Quick question. Is a false negative ad, is that a positive ad? I mean, you're probably better at math than I am, Todd, but... A false negative ad. Well, that would mean it's a true ad, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. No. A false negative is a false negative.
I mean, that's like multiplying negative 2 times negative 4 equals positive fucking 8, right?
He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking to. He's so goddamn ignorant, he's confusing me. Yes.
And this, and you know, and this vicious prick.
He means to say a false positive, which means
no, they're running false ads about me, or they're running negative ads about me. But he wants, you know, they're twice as bad. They're false negative ads, which kind of means that they're true ads. And this is a guy with an accounting degree.
Oh, you know what? This shit is. I was really laughing hard. I know I'm not trying to eat up your time, but honest to God, I haven't laughed this hard in months. And the thing is, and then I caught myself. I'm like, but wait a minute, this really isn't funny. This guy's a convicted felon.
No, he's not. Now you quit that. You quit that. He is not a convicted felon.
What? What the hell? All right, the man's been in prison.
He is a convicted misdemeanor. It is a felony to rip off shareholders. It's only a misdemeanor to incinerate 29 coal miners.
Well. And that's really the part that really I don't like is when I saw the video. When they say, see, it's just, you know, verbiage is one thing. When you hear, okay, safety violations. But when you see how rickety those damn elevators, I mean, this shit, he was not putting any money into those mines. This shit was fucked
well,
up.
Well, fuck no. If you put money into the mines, you're not getting money out of the mines. I mean, that's the whole reason.
I mean, seriously.
I'm not serious.
Oh, don't start
that. Oh dear, I did that, didn't I?
You did. No, you're not. Yes, you not did that.
But the 100, you know, the 125, 130, 140, 150 year history of coal mining in Appalachia is one in which you put as little into the mines as possible so that you can make as much coming out of the mines. It's capitalism run wild.
That doesn't sound sustainable.
Well, but it's proven to be as long as the coal's there. I mean, consider It's what a buddy of mine referred to as the raindrop rule. A coal company worries more about a raindrop than it does a human being that works for them.
Damn. But,
because a raindrop could hit a piece of equipment. And if the raindrop hits a piece of equipment, it might cause that piece of equipment to develop a rust spot. And if that piece of equipment develops a rust spot, the rust on that piece of equipment might spread, and they might have to buy a new piece of equipment. On the other hand...
I give you the benefit of the doubt many times. Now, come on, you're exaggerating.
It's the raindrop rule. On the other hand, if a coal miner gets killed, you can fight his widow all the way through the workers' compensation system until she'll settle for pennies on the goddamn dollar, and then there's another dumb bastard waiting there to take his place. Workers are a dime a goddamn dozen. Machines that get hit by raindrops are expensive.
You know what? Your neighbors, and I don't want to say compatriots because they're not your compatriots, but your neighbors, they have no choice. They have to go to the mines to earn money so they can buy more guns.
It's not like it once was. I mean, there were 100,000 coal miners in West Virginia in 1980. There aren't 15,000 now. There's more Walmart workers. There's more
15,000? That ain't shit.
You know, there are six in my county, which used to be a coal-heavy county, there are 600 coal workers left. That's it.
Okay. We need to talk to people. Look, this is a talking point that is powerful. Anytime anybody brings up that coal bullshit, say there are in a monotone, there are 15,000 workers total in the state of West Virginia. A large high school had 2,500 kids in it.
Yeah, but here's the trick, Todd. Those 600 people working in the mines, a bunch of them don't have any more than a high school education, and I'm not slamming people's education by saying this. But coal in this state retained its magic influence because there weren't many other places where a fellow with a high school education could go. And the next thing he knew, after 5 or 10 years, be making $125,000 a year, as long as he didn't get killed or burned up or blown up or buried alive. That $125K a year is a big motivator for going into that hole every day. Because if you don't have that, because there aren't any hundred and... Shit! For people with master's degrees... There aren't that many $125,000 a year jobs in this state. I mean, I know meat and potatoes lawyers who have years of experience and a law degree. And they ain't pulling down no $125K like some fucking coal miner is.
No, pay scale different in the South.
I mean, the national average many years ago for lawyers, you know, just the all over the whole country, I think the national average for lawyers was $32,000. Maybe it's up to $45,000 now.
I know.
Lawyers of all sort. So, I mean,
while I have your ear, you want to watch Better Call Saul. You want to watch that?
Well, I can't do anything till I'm done with Breaking Bad, and I'm in season three. I'm early in season three. I got two more seasons to go. I can't binge watch it because it just stresses me out.
And I heard what you said about Breaking Bad. Let me say this: Breaking Bad and The Sopranos are the two finest television series that have been produced, probably.
I don't know. There are probably people out there that would fight with you and put The Wire in there somewhere too.
Well, The Wire's in there. The Wire's in there. All right. Okay. It's in the top 10 in the past 15, 20 years, let's say. Top 10. But, you know, forget about the drugs. It's really about the drugs are just a vehicle for the development of the relationships in that series. And, you know, I know it's disturbing because it's so real. It's like, damn, I have seen this. I know that guy. You know, it's crazy. You know, it's like a.
I gotta share this with you and with the rest of the community. Darlene just wrote in a minute ago, and she said, "I haven't seen the Blankenship commercial that you're running, but for some reason, your description of the two girls—you've seen the ad, right? You've seen the two girls.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
Well, okay, so we're gonna give a cowbell to Darlene right now, because Darlene says I haven't seen the commercial. But for some reason, your description of the... Get ready, Todd. But for some reason, your description of the two girls is conjuring images of the twin girls from The Shining in my mind. Yes! Yes! Absolutely yes! They're like from the road company of The Shining.
Oh, Darlene's on point. Okay.
Nailed it!
Wow. Oh, my God. And this dude is dead-eyed Dick. I mean, something's wrong with him. I mean, that's a whole show. God.
And by the way, Ron in Raleigh with a reminder says, remember, as that eminent mathematical scholar Jethro Bodine observed, naught times naught equals naught.
Yo, man, I love you. Oh, my God. Yo, I'm telling you, when I was in college, we had... It was a certain time of day, like my hallmate. We all had no classes a certain time of day. We'd burn up and watch the Beverly Hillbillies. And the naught thing, I was like, what? A naught? I never heard that shit before. Naught. Right. So.
I was going to be a brain surgeon, but now I'm going to be a double naught spy. it's no big giveaway, but once upon a time, my phone number, the last four digits, was not.
No way.
Way.
Your whole phone number? Your personal phone number?
Mm-hmm.
That's...
I lucked right into it.
I know no one who's ever... No, that's... I've never heard that. Ever. Oh, I'm sorry I went up on these tangents, but I had to...
Well, that's okay. We're going to finish the audio so everybody else can share in our joy.
But this shit is,
yes, it's disturbing. It's disturbing when you realize just how...
Who the fuck why didn't somebody say, wait a minute. No, this doesn't look right. Who was around? I'm sorry to yell, but this shit is fucking weird, man.
Well, it is, but these ads are calculated. This isn't like the Blair Witch Project where they just turned on the camera and he started talking. These are scripted ads. These ads exist for a reason. There is purpose behind them. They are designed to achieve a stated goal.
And there's China people.
But they work because he tweeted out. I think we can ditch the out. But he tweeted, "The president doesn't know me, and he doesn't know how flawed my two main opponents are in this primary. The establishment is misinforming him because they do not want me to be in the U.S. Senate and promote the president's agenda. Tomorrow, West Virginia will send the swamp a message. No one, and I mean no one, will tell us how to vote. As some have said, I am Trumpier than Trump, and this morning proves it." Because he was responding,
damn.
Because he was responding to Trump tweeting out that that Blankenship can't beat Manchin. But see, what the multimillionaire for-profit media won't tell you is that Don Blankenship he's really rich. He's not Trump rich. He's really rich, Todd. He could buy Donald Trump for what he thinks he's worth and sell him for what he's actually worth, and never count the loss. Okay.
Is it true he lives in Las Vegas?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got a mansion.
Why do you think he lives in Las Vegas?
He's
got. What do you think he's doing?
Beats. Look, it beats the hell out of living on next to a mountaintop removal site on the Tug Fork River. Trust me, Las Vegas is funner than being across the river from Mingo County, West Virginia. There's a story to Don Blankenship. This guy isn't a guy who was born rich. He fought. You've read your Faulkner, right?
Yeah.
He's a Snopes. He's Flim fucking Snopes. Okay.
Oh God, I believe that.
He was born dirt poor. To a mama, who had no idea who his daddy was. And he scrabbled and scrounged and busted his ass. And got himself into Marshall, worked his way through college, got an accounting degree, got in with a coal company, and started stomping and gouging until he built that coal company into a goddamn behemoth, and then he took control of it. Along the way, he traveled to South Africa to see how the regime there put down black people who were working for mining companies over there, and he brought his learning home.
Ain't that some shit?
He went toe to toe with the United Mine Workers and whipped that ass and made them like it.
Damn.
He's dangerous. Always has been. He's vicious.
Well, see, that background that you described, for most folks, unless you're very exceptional, that will make someone just not give a fuck.
He does not give. He is fresh out of fucks to give. And when he says nobody, and I mean nobody, I mean he just told Trump that he has more influence in West Virginia than Trump does, and he's willing to show him.
Your state is starting to scare me, by the way. Because you got that.
You! I love you, man, but fuck you, I live here.
I don't know how you do it, because apparently anybody can buy a gun, right? You just walk in, you want to buy a gun. Then you can walk around with it concealed, doesn't matter, concealed anywhere. You got a gun like you were in the Wild West. You know? Is that true?
Yes. Except like the post office, because we ain't got freedom here, because you can't go to the post office with your freedom protector, because they done put up a sign that says you can't.
And they hate that shit too.
But if your postmaster or postmistress loves freedom, she won't pay no attention to what you got in your pocket, because she knows you just love freedom.
Baby, you come on in. I know you ain't hurt nobody.
You just defending yourself. I know it. I'm glad you're here in case the ISIS shows up to check their mail while you're here. They got a box here, you know.
Huh?
They got a box here, you know, the ISIS. I mean, I think they're ISIS. I mean, they ain't white like us. They could be ISIS.
Well, we done had a good run last week. And everybody's slipping and shining. Anyway, I don't know if you got that.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, raindrop rule, James wrote in Illinois and said, iron workers raindrop rule, we went home when it rained. The rule, 3 to the brick or 9 to the acre.
And is that somebody who used to work in the mines?
No, that's James is an old iron worker.
Okay.
And it's true. But the raindrop rule, as it applies to coal companies, is the fact that that they worry more about machinery than they do men. And more so now than ever, because on mountaintop removal sites, it takes about 10 guys running a bunch of extremely expensive heavy equipment to take down 5,000 acres. So you can lose a guy and it ain't no big deal. But you got to keep that equipment going. But let's finish the audio off just so we can get it all. But yeah, yes, Darlene, definitely reminiscent of The Shining. And I'm not trying to talk bad about two precious-looking little white girls. I mean, But what kind of parent lets them appear in his ad?
We're not saying that at all. We are not saying that at all. Right. They're being used as props. We're not saying that at all.
Here we go.
Fact is, China family has given him tens of millions of dollars. Mitch's swamp people are now running false negative ads against me. They are also childishly calling me despicable and mentally ill. The war to drain the swamp and create jobs for West Virginia people has begun. I will beat Joe Manchin and ditch cocaine Mitch for the sake of the kids.
And see, there's another little phrase in there that matters, for the sake of the kids. See, he dummied up the West Virginia Supreme Court some years back using that same phrase. He created an ostensible charity called And For the Sake of the Kids in order to elect a hand-picked creep to the West Virginia Supreme Court to protect his ass from a judgment that somebody had gotten against him for for ripping him off. For the sake of the kids. So he's reminding everybody, for the sake of the kids, remember me, Don Blankenship? Yeah, don't fuck with me.
Like you said, everything's directed, obviously.
It's not. There's none of this is accidental.
Which is terrible. That, you know, it's very. You know, this is what I want to tell you. Oh my God. Okay, so Washington Journal update. Last week. So this is Monday, right? So Thursday and Friday, on fire. All right, the Civil War is really, it has started. And to combine that, even on Morning Joe, I think Donnie Deutsch, he even mentioned it. You know, because Meacham's out with his book now, you know, and he's making no bones about the backbone of his book is the original sin of this country. And so, you know, things are coming to a head. But, you know, it's painful, but it's cathartic. I don't know where this is going to end up, because folks are just complacent, being ignorant, some folks. And, you know, this business about when you start saying, well, you know, you're too academic, or, you know, all that nonsense. See, that is not good at all. We cannot move forward. We cannot move forward with that type of thinking. I don't know. It's just disturbing. And there was just a lot of, I can't be the only one. I know some, and I don't know if you listened to it last week, but yeah, it's pretty bad, because these folks who back the regime, you know, they just don't understand what's going on. Or they do understand, and they're okay with it. You know, and where does that leave us?
Well, where that leaves us is exactly where Hillary Clinton said we were. I know. Oh, Jesus, he's mentioned Hillary. She said, although no Republican seems capable of remembering it, she said about half of Trump's supporters are decent people. The other half are racists and Nazis and Klansmen and skinheads, and I put them in the basket of deplorables.
Yeah, she was right.
She was right. She was right. And the thing is, oh, they remember that so well, but I guess they never heard that clip of Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos saying the same goddamn thing, and saying that actually more than half of the GOP base is alt-right.
Maybe, Bob, maybe you can explain this to me also. I find that in Washington Journal, the angry folks in the Trump camp, many of them, and there are a lot of them, you know, and somehow middle-aged white guys are downtrodden and beset upon. And you know, they feel like society has just beaten them up all the time, and they don't have any rights, and, you know, everybody's out to get them. I don't know where this is coming from.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, what planet, on what planet are they living where they really feel that way? How can they, we see, in other words, we all see the same thing. Everything's happened the same around us. Even though, you know, vision is subjective, all that, blah, blah, blah. But we're all seeing the same thing, and we interpret it so differently. We're all seeing the same thing. And some people see Trump as being beat up by the press all the time, and, you know, just let him do what he wants to do. And they feel as if...
They've got their sense of... They want to be validated. They want to be proven right. They want to look and say, well, see, we picked Trump and he saved America. Look at all them jobs. Well, the fact of the matter is, those jobs numbers he keeps talking about, they're not exactly what you might think they were. In fact, I got a note from a friend of ours over the weekend talking about the conniption over... over the jobs numbers, and I will refrain from giving a name to this, but our correspondent says, I was at my in-laws this evening, 90-ish Fox-watching Trump voters, and even though the sound was off, the crowing about the 3.9% unemployment rate was hard to miss. Lurking on the Chiron were a couple of inconvenient items that suggest that the Trump Department of Labor is cooking the books. The text mentioned that in March, 135,000 new jobs were added, followed by April, when 164,000 were added. These numbers sound great, but they appear to be offered without context, namely that over the last 2 months, the outstanding Trump economy has added 51,000 fewer jobs than are needed to accommodate new entrants into the workforce. Yet somehow the unemployment rate has gone down. The economy didn't accommodate the new entrants, yet the unemployment rate went down, SMH. That's some math, that cook in the books math. It's not like Tangerine Tiberius is above hyperbole or Fox, a.k.a. Pravda, is beyond glorifying anything that makes the man with a crystal ego, Trump, look good to those who have neither the memory or math skills to realize they're being played. Your typical Trump voter. Being neither, I am dubious. And you know what? When you're dealing with this kind of stuff, getting dubious can often be helpful. You see what I did there? But they want to be validated in the ignorance of their choice. See, we was right. Hillary couldn't have done this year.
Well, see, okay, and I'm glad you brought this up.
And wages, you know,
this is a big issue.
Yeah, wages aren't going up appreciably.
No.
The corporate tax cut is being used. What for? That's right. Stock buybacks, Yeah, just like Marco Rubio admitted, and then promptly ran away from for all he was freaking worth.
So, confirmation bias. Really be explained to a lot of folks, and it's a shame.
Todd, they got other stuff wrapped up in it too, because if they're right, that means all those people are wrong, regardless of whoever all those people are. They hate those people, whether those people are the liberals, whether those people are the Hillary voters, whether those people are the black people or the Mexicans or the trans people or the gay people or the lesbian people or the bi people or anybody that they basically fucking hate. I mean, I saw a post today about another candidate in West Virginia, and some guy posted down there and said, I used to be a Democrat till the Democrats started supporting them disgusting homosexuals, doing them disgusting things.
You see, this is 2018. Well, oh my God, that is that you understand? You can almost get arrested, like in a lot of cities, for saying some dumb shit like that.
Well, we ain't got jails enough to hold them, and I guess that's part of my thesis. That this situation, Todd, is far worse than most people have the guts to admit. And it takes courage to admit that our country is as messed up as it is, because if we ever get a chance to fix it, and we don't address how messed up it is from jump, then it'll never be fixed. Mm-hmm. By the way, I was thinking earlier, you know, you taking one for the team and watching Washington Journal and everything, there needs to be a website of stupid things, stupid racist, hateful, mean things that get said on Washington Journal.
I agree.
Just clip after clip after clip. So that they can be
grandmother.
So that they can be circulated. Grandmother. Which grandmother?
Yeah. Come on, the one who had her daughter apparently had children from different types of men, and you know, Hispanic, black, white, whatever, and then so she was calling the Hispanic child a beaner, and I think she said nigger. I mean, it was pretty. She didn't say nigger. It was pretty close. But and her rationale was that she was trying to harden up the kids because they're going to have a hard life. And it was the craziest thing. But I get what you're saying because you can timestamp. You can see what people are calling it. But yeah, this past week though, this we have to come to grips with this because. With this racial, this is really, really out of control. This is so out of control. And folks of our age, we understand that things are much better. They have been much better than they are now in terms of racial race. This what we're going through now is ridiculous. And it's unnecessary. And I didn't mean to cut you off. But I'm
no, that's okay.
It's upsetting. And I know you're about to say something, but it's just and to see I mean our country in the midst of all of this, you see this racist Giuliani come out because he's always been racist.
Yeah, see here it is Moran Monday, and I didn't even get around to Giuliani's craziness.
His shit, what in the hell was he thinking about?
Dude ain't home.
We thought Trump
But see, there was the crazy shit about Trump and Stormy and Michael Cohen and all that stuff over the weekend. And then he went and got all crazy over Iran.
What do you say about that?
Oh, I mean, you know, it was him. He had a piece of paper in his hand and said, we need to tear up the agreement with Iran. And he tears up the paper and he spits on it.
What? Oh. That man is supposed to represent what he is. He is not supposed. You see, he is representing us because he represents the president. Do you understand that?
I do.
I didn't mean to say it like that, but this is like disturbing. Did you hear? I didn't watch it, but did you hear the music behind Melania? I don't know.
Be best. Did you see the hashtag that developed as a result of be best? Not be the best.
No.
Be best. No. Be best. Is old Slobovian saying from when I was growing up little girl in south side of Chicago. Be best. a hashtag immediately got started. I don't know. Maybe our buddy Sandra started it.
Sandra in California.
Yeah. But the hashtag was I want to get mix in an article. You know, not be the best. Be hashtag mix in an article.
Yeah. Well.
I mean. But then the best part of that, Todd, was when it turned out that her new pamphlet produced in conjunction with Federal Trade Commission turned out to be the same thing the Obama administration had put out years before, and they just added her name to it.
That's it. Boop. The boilerplate was there.
Yep, plagiarized all you know, plagiarized all over again, just like she did with Michelle's speech. You know, and to be fair, it was pretty obvious that she plagiarized Michelle's speech because she was talking about growing up a poor little black child on the south side of Chicago.
You know something? I have a real problem with all of this in terms of her and this whole initiative, because what is this cyberbullying? Look at her husband. How the fuck is she talking about cyberbullying? Look at her fucking husband.
Yeah. What about the real bullying?
I mean, come on. And then, you know, she sounds like, when she talks, I'm like, she sounds like a goddamn baby eater. I can see her eating a baby.
I think she'd just drink its blood, but that's me. I think she, but I don't want to take anything away from her. Her voiceover talents as the Count on Sesame Street were not to be, they'll never be any better. One! Yes. Hey, Todd, we're 15 minutes over, man. I got to get out of here.
I'm sorry, man. I've been laughing too much. Hey, okay. Hey, man, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. You take care, my friend. Bye now.
All right, you too, my friend.
That's the one and only Todd, Barbecue Todd, down in the South Carolina stand. It is time to get out of here. So tomorrow the fundraising goal will be $490, unless it comes down somehow miraculously overnight. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining in the conversation. Thanks for your emails and your tweets and your chat room participation. Thanks for listening. Or maybe thanks for laughing, and thanks for screaming, and thanks for yelling at the speakers, and thank you. Thank you for being part of this ongoing conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff in the chat room this evening. Thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan. Thanks to our News and Inches. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you to John Fox. Thanks, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.